You can now hear Film Actually on Stitcher Radio. Stitcher allows you to listen to your favorite shows directly on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or WebOS device. The latest episode is always available for you. No syncing needed, no memory wasted. Don't have Stitcher? Download it for free today at Stitcher.com.
Greetings! The Master Control Program has chosen you to serve your system on the game grid. Those of you who continue to profess a belief in the users will receive the standard, substandard training which will result in your eventual elimination. Those of you who renounce this superstitious and hysterical belief will be eligible to join the warrior elite of the MCP. You will each receive an identity disc. Everything you do or learn will be imprinted on this disc. If you lose your disc or fail to follow commands, you will be subject to immediate de-resolution.
Everybody, and welcome to our Film Actually Tron special. I'm Dave McVeigh, and I'm joined by Josh Philpott. How are you, Josh?
I'm fine. I've had caffeine, and it is middle of the day. I am at the best time.
It's the middle of the wrong day.
Yeah, but it's the middle of the week, middle of the day. I am all good.
We have a special guest today.
We do.
We do. We have a very special guest coming in all the way from the land of the United States.
Yep.
Fox4649 from Real Junkies. Are you there?
This is Fox, and from the other side of the screen, it all looks so easy.
How are you, Fox?
Oh, I'm doing good. It's the end of my day.
That's true. What time is it over there now?
After 7. Let me look at my phone, because I'm an idiot to wear a watch. It is 1921 hours over here.
1921.
Who has a watch now? Seriously.
I do.
Old people.
Who you calling old,
I have an old
analog
watch I still wear I bought in Kuwait.
Oh, wow.
The thing hasn't died yet, so I'm just keeping it.
Oh, it says Rolex on it, right?
With two X's.
Yeah. Nice.
It's like Timex with half a K.
All right, so why are we here, boys?
I don't know. We were going to talk about some movie, something.
Some little thing that, you know, it's kind of this, under the carpet film.
That no one knows and that no one has ever watched.
All right, so.
Except for me religiously at least 5 times a year.
Yeah.
So let's clarify this for our listeners out there, which is we are actually going to do a roundup, basically, of the Tron experience. Now, I know that Tron, on the most part, isn't in mini cinemas anymore. But it is coming out on DVD, Blu-ray in April. I believe it in Australia. It's April 20th. Do you have a release date in the States yet, Fox?
Yes, we do, but I don't have it in front of me.
Fair enough. It's probably around the same time. I would imagine that...
I'll ask B. Wayne and Killaby to throw that up real quick for me, because they're in front of their Googles.
That's great. Yeah, just to remind people that we do go out live on all of our shows, and we do have a live chat room. Yeah. And in our chat room, we actually have the other two-thirds or... Almost the entire complement of Real Junkies.
Yeah.
So it should be an interesting show because we've got people firing in all over the place. So, and a reminder that if you ever want to catch one of our shows live, you just go to geekactually.com/live. A bit of plugging. You know, we just got to get that plugging
in
there.
Man. Yeah, we'll do more of that later at the end.
Holy crap. Fritz in our chat room has said, my 5-disc edition is already pre-ordered. 5-disc edition?
Yep.
We're not getting that one here.
Yeah, I've seen it, though. It's badass.
What are they putting on 5 discs?
I don't know. What were they putting on Blade Runner's 5 discs?
Yeah,
Everything that they had.
There's about 40,000 cuts of that movie.
That's true.
Well, yeah, what they're doing with Tron is it's like 2 Blu-rays, one for each movie, and then you get it on DVD, one each, and then I think there's a digital print, and maybe there's a Blu-ray for all the making of features.
Mm. See, and you know what? I actually resent that because they make it sound like it's a big special edition, and yet it's really just the same thing over and over and over again on many different formats.
Does anyone remember HD DVDs?
Damn right. I still have a whole bunch.
I don't have any.
Yeah. I don't even know.
I bought the player for Xbox, and all of the, when you bought a disc, it was DVD on one side and HD DVD on the other. Mm. I don't understand why Blu-ray doesn't do that.
Yeah, well, yeah, it'd be nice to think that they would, but I don't even know if my drive still works. Mm. It's been that long since I've used it.
You can pick them up really cheap sometimes. I actually went into one of our retailers over here, which is called Easy DVD, and they had like a basket of HD DVDs. They were like $2 each.
Mm. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's where
it's
I
like
got
a
most
clown
of
out front juggling them.
Just buy them. Just steal, please.
And I'm convinced to this day that Blu-ray won that war purely because it had the cooler name.
You reckon?
Yeah, Blu-ray.
No, it was because, like, nothing support. Anyway, this is an argument for another show.
That's
this
a whole different show. All right, we're talking about Tron, though. So I thought what we'd do is we'd break this up a little bit and start from the beginning, basically. So we will start with the original Tron. And I've got a question for you, James, which is,
yeah,
what were your first experiences with Tron?
I first saw Tron in 1983 at my birthday party, which was in February 83. My dad had rented a VCR for us because it was one of the top-loading ones. They were like $2,000 each.
Oh, I remember those.
And we rented Time Bandits and Tron for my birthday party. And we put it in, and I was absolutely mesmerized by it.
Wow.
I love
so
Time
cool.
Bandits, too. Good film.
Yeah. Tron really was one of those movies, though, because my situation was very similar to yours, man. The first time I saw it was just literally one of the first, you know, sort of rentals that I remember was just getting Tron and sticking it in and just seeing this world that just blew my little, probably 8-year-old mind at the time. It was just amazing. I've always loved Tron. Came out 2 years before I was born. So,
I was about to say, you both have dated me a little bit because you both watched it on VHS. I actually saw Tron at the cinema. In fact, I could not find
anybody to take me to the drive-in where I was. I saw like Megaforce and Secret of NIMH, but nobody would take me to see Tron.
Oh, Megaforce. Oh, my God. I remember that one, too. No, I remember Tron really, really well. We actually got tickets to an advanced screening. It was a special screening where they actually printed these special cardboard tickets and the whole bit. Very nice.
Yes.
And there's a cinema in Melbourne. James from Melbourne is in our chat room. He'll know this. But there's a cinema in Melbourne called The Forum. And nowadays, it's kind of used for concerts and all sorts of other junk, and they've really spoiled it. But back in the 80s, this was like the premier movie house. This is where E.T. made its debut. This is where Tron made its debut. And this was where they showed like the first run big film. And it had beautiful deco theater. It's got like Roman statues. And the ceiling was actually painted like a night sky with stars on it. And so it's a beautiful cinema. And I really wish one day somebody would restore it back to being the great movie house that it was. And James Melvin says, yeah, it was the old classic. Mm. So I remember going to see Tron there. And we sat down, my friend and I at the time, Robert, and we were just blown away. This was like the most amazing thing we had ever seen. And I was almost shattered, though, that the film failed.
Mm.
Because I just watched it going, this is evolution. This is the future of cinema. You know, we are seeing something that nobody has done before, which is what all filmmakers strive to do. You strive to do something that nobody's ever seen before. And they did that. And this is what Disney was famous for.
Mm.
Now, a lot of people sit there and go, oh, it's Disney crap. It's Disney. This is Disney. Walt Disney himself, the man, was an innovator. Everything that he did was about pushing that boundary, pushing that trying something new. And even though he was dead when Tron was made, the people who are running Disney actually are quoted as saying, this is the kind of film Walt would have made. That's something new. That's something that nobody else has tried before. And unfortunately, it failed. Like a lot of Disney's films did, funnily enough, in their first run.
But only it only really failed money-wise.
Money-wise,
like, I don't think it was ever like shunned. Like immediately there was...
You know, it's interesting you say that. Because, like, as a kid seeing it on at home, which I'd never really done before with a VCR, is like, this thing's awesome. I can actually bring this thing home. Like, I thought it was a big success as a kid. Mm. Like, I didn't know the money aspect of anything. But to me, I never had the impression that it failed. It was just, you know, there were the kids in school who really liked it and those that didn't. So there was, like, geeks and not geeks.
Well, it was one of those films that kind of, because it failed initially, I think that was one of the reasons that it kind of succeeded in the long run, because there were all these people growing up with it, and it wasn't until they got to the point where they could start spending money that you would ever reap a benefit from them.
I think, quite frankly, it's financial failure twofold. I think it's financial failure is people didn't know what they were seeing.
Mm.
They had no idea what the hell they were seeing. This whole idea of going inside a computer, nobody even knew what a computer was, you know, in 1982, let's face it. And the second factor behind its failure, of course, was a little alien called E.T.
Yeah.
That little alien sucked the oxygen out of the box office that year, quite frankly, when it came to the science fiction market. That film went on to win Oscars and, you know, and all this sort of stuff. And it was the number one money-making film of all time. It was untouchable until Titanic came out. Mm-hmm. So I think you could quite honestly say this film sucked the oxygen completely out of the room.
Yeah.
And Tron...
That in 1982 itself was very big for science fiction in the long run, because you had Star Trek 2 came out.
Absolutely.
Wow, yeah, Jesus. Mm-hmm. I hadn't even thought of
Blade
that.
Blade Runner.
Yep. Conan.
Yeah. It was just, it just kind of got decimated. It was one of those annoying things. It's like putting a TV series on during Super Bowl. It's just nothing's going to, you're never going to see the light of day because it just got destroyed. And
correct me if I'm wrong, Fox. What's it called? Puppy Bowl? Is that the one that they put up?
The Puppy Bowl?
The Puppy Bowl? They put up against Super Bowl every year?
during the halftime show, you go watch the Puppy Bowl. And there's like a kitten halftime show within the Puppy Bowl.
And this year,
or you can watch the Lingerie Bowl.
And this year they had chicken cheerleaders.
Chicken cheerleaders.
Chicken cheerleaders. See, I didn't end up watching it because that night was like the night I was going out for like my birthday dinner. So I was like, you know what? I already saw all the commercials I needed to see, which was the Vader kid starting a car. It's like, I'm good. I saw what I needed.
Best commercial ever. I put that on the site. I love that. I love his reaction when the car starts. He kind of jumps back. It's brilliant. Anyway.
That is perfect.
It's just brilliant. All right. So... We're establishing at this point that Tron was an economic failure. Mm. I mean, this was an expensive film to make. It kind of took the world. But I think it is probably the fastest turnaround to cult film and cult status I've ever seen. As soon as it came out on home video market, it was a constant renter. People were kind of really adapting to it. Because computer technology was also adapting really fast. Mm. People were catching up much faster. If Tron, I still stand by the fact that if Tron had come out 5 years later, it would have been... complete success. Absolutely. I think it was just a little bit ahead of its game. I watched a film just on a sidetrack. I watched a film last night. I don't know if you guys have ever seen it, called Runaway, which is a Michael Crichton film with Tom Selleck.
Mm-hmm. I used to love that movie.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've seen it many times. It's incredibly dated.
Mm.
It's incredibly dated. 1980s film about a future where robots are commonplace and there's now a special... part of the police force called the Runaway Squad, which go and take care of the robots that go crazy.
You know?
And... I just look at that film and I go, the concepts are right.
Mm.
The film was just too early.
Yeah.
You know, and it's the same thing.
Because all the robots were giant, clunky things. It's like, how did we let these things get out of control? We need a special police department.
Well, that's right. They're all 2.5 feet tall bread boxes. You know? You go, how threatening is that? You know? But, and it's the same thing with Tron. I just feel like it was just that little bit ahead of... It was a little bit ahead of the audience.
Well, I think that it worked in its favor, though, because I'm sorry, but like you said, Tron dates. It does, and it dates really badly. And, like, I mean, after watching it just before Tron 2 came out, I will actually say that I sat there and went, I can understand. I'm sorry, but I can actually understand Disney's point of view. I can look at that film and go, if I was 10-year-old now... and I watched this film, I'd be like, this is the dumbest thing I've ever seen. And it hurt me to say that, but like an average 10-year-old nowadays expects giant effects and all this sort of wonderful things. And it's like Tron was a timepiece. And like,
interesting you say that, though. My 11-year-old...
No, I mean...
Absolutely adored Tron.
You have a geek child, so that's different.
He's my boy.
All right, if it was me at 10 now, I would probably still enjoy it. But that's what I'm saying. It's like Tron does date. And it's like the great thing about it hitting cult status was that that's the only shot that I think it ever would have got. Because I think if it had become a famous film, I don't think it would have got the following that it has now. Like, people started watching it because people were fascinated by computers. They always have been. They don't know how they work. Hmm. They have no interest. I know.
There's no way in school I was looking at a computer and not immediately think of Tron.
Yeah,
like, it so colored how I viewed everything after that point.
Absolutely. And you know what? I mean, I still believe that people still believe there's magical fairies inside a computer because I work in a retail computer situation, and I think that's how people think everything works. They bring it to the, you know, controlling people that control the fairies, and they leave it with me, and I fix it, and then they get to take it home.
They didn't get to an I.O. tower. Exactly. It's as simple as that.
No, that's actually what I do every time I fix a computer. I go inside it, and I fight alongside Tron's.
James McElroy makes the observation that the average 10-year-old goes to the movies a hell of a lot more than when he was 10. That's probably true, actually. 10-year-olds today probably do go to the movies a whole lot more than they used to. Mm. Although, I guess I'm an anomaly because I went to the movies all the time. Yeah. I mean, that was my pastime. So, okay, so we have an interesting situation happen here because we're not going to be very clear here. We're not going to review Tron Legacy. We're not going to review Tron because we actually covered a lot of this on our show. Fox, you covered a lot of this on your show. So we're not actually here to review the films. We're just kind of retrospecting the films. We're looking at the films. We're looking at concepts behind the films and so forth. And I got to say, right after Tron came out, there was already rumblings of a sequel. And they started to talk about what could they do next with this and, you know, and all this sort of stuff. But, of course, with the film being a financial failure at the time, nobody was willing to back it. And Steve Lisberger, the director and producer of the film, basically said for a long time he was trying to get a Tron 2 happening, but it just wasn't going to happen. And he just could not find the financing for it. So I think it's fair to say that Tron took a different direction at that point, and probably a logical direction at that point, which was it went into the computer game industry.
Well,
which, if I remember, was around the time the 20th anniversary disc came out. I could have my timing down wrong, but they restored it and everything, and then they had like a fake preview or something for Tron Deadly App, which eventually became the Tron 2.0.
Oh, hold on. I'm actually thinking earlier than that. Yeah, no. I'm actually thinking the arcade games. Yeah. I'm thinking the first. If I'm not wrong. From memory, the first couple of Tron games that came out didn't succeed. No. They had like light cycles, and
I don't think any of them have ever succeeded.
Discs of
Tron. No, the main one did. Yeah, the one where you had to choose the four things.
Yeah, Discs of Tron was the one where it finally just exploded. Mm. And there was that full encased cabinet where you actually stepped into the cabinet and you actually, it was all blue lighting and all that, so it was really kind of funky and cool. I remember playing that game a lot.
Yeah. Well, Tron to me, I think, and to every geek, like every, especially gamers and so on and so forth, it was our standpoint. This was where we began our belief that video games could become so much more. It's like all those beliefs that we could make someone real looking in a situation and have them shooting and flying and running up walls and you know, powering big vehicles. It all came from our belief that this was where we were going. And Tron was the bread and butter for all this. So everyone wanted Tron. It's like every time Tron comes out, the games still sell. They don't sell well, but you've always got that small group of people that will just do it.
Can I ask Fox a question real quickly? What are your recollections of arcades back in those days?
Oh, I absolutely loved arcades all the time. Anytime I could get in there. I used to work in an arcade for a while, too.
Right. Dude, but that's just sick.
Just the sounds and smells of them and just hearing everyone cheering or swearing at something or somebody just got finished in Mortal Kombat. Constant sound around you and just playing these games. You were so into it. Okay, you weren't doing that at home.
So that's sort of Mortal Kombat era, yeah?
Yeah.
Because I was just thinking that the portrayal of the arcade in the first Tron, you know, Flynn's, which is that, you know, really crowded room with full of people and all that noise of all those various games. And it's almost kind of like a smoke-filled casino, you know, it's almost how it feels. And everybody's standing around cheering people on.
Hey, good to see you guys. Nothing classes up a joint like a clean-cut young couple.
We gotta talk.
We can't even get yourself thinking here. Come on.
I remember that. I remember that so clearly. At 1981 through to about 1984, arcades were the place. I mean, that's just where everybody hung out. And James from Melbourne, once again, you're from Melbourne, so you'll understand. Russell Street crossing Bourke Street, which is kind of like the center of where all the cinemas were in the city. Nowadays, it's kind of like heroin central. But back then, it was like where everybody hung out. And right along Russell Street there was like seven arcades in a row. Literally one right next to another, you know?
Wow.
And now, you're hard-pressed to find one, you know? And it's
We've dropped down to basically the expensive time zone places. And
yeah, basically. And time zone wasn't the one you went to. I mean, we used to go to all the, like, the little independent ones and so forth. And people were just shoveling 20-cent pieces, 50-cent pieces, dollar coins, whatever it was at that time. You know, I mean, dollar coins came. I actually remember when dollar coins came into this country and everybody went, oh, that's the death of the arcade because now everything's going to go to dollar coins, you know? And, of course, they did. But that was just, I mean...
And Chuck E. Cheese was a big deal over here, too.
Oh, Chuck E. Cheese.
Before they
kind
of stripped them all out and made them redemption games. Arcades and Chuck E. Cheese's were phenomenal.
Yeah, I was actually at a Chuck E. Cheese in 2007, and it was all tokens and tickets and stuff.
Yeah, they've all become
those. Yeah, I hate that stuff.
Yeah. It's the death of the actual concept of the arcade machine. But, I mean, like, arcade is going online now, so it's that's kind of where everything
pretty
is.
Much, yeah.
But yeah, I mean, look, even when I was a kid, it was still there and it was still a presence. And I mean, I spent a lot of my youth, it may have been a small town thing because, you know, like no one could really afford good computers or consoles or anything like that. But arcades were hugely popular when I grew up. And yeah, it was the same sort of situation. It was like you went there and you shoveled your half your allowance into these machines and then went home complaining that you need to get better at video games because you're spending too much money on them. But yeah, it was the thing. And I mean, arcade machines to me have a great standpoint, and Tron and stuff like that were never around when I was a kid. But look, there's so much inspiration from that in every video game that is around. You will always see aspects of things that you saw in Tron. And it's like retro is so in right now that this was the best time we could ever launch a sequel. You know what I mean?
Well, we'll get to the sequel in a minute, because there's some interesting things we want to raise about that. So, okay, let's move past the arcades. And, yeah, you're right, Fox. When I bought my anniversary edition of Tron on DVD, it had that trailer for that new game. Is that the game that eventually became Tron 2.0? Is that?
Yes.
I believe so. It was something they were trying to do online, or like an ARG or something like that. It was alternate reality games. I think that's what they're trying to do, but it didn't pan out, so they made it into that third-person slash first-person shooter 2.0.
Now, I never played
which this, I never so. Actually played.
Yeah. Sorry.
Tell us about it. I've never actually played
Tron 2.0. Tron 2.0 was one of those flawed games that that you have to have a love of what you're playing to really enjoy. It is a bit like the way that it was for me playing Tron Evolution, because it was kind of like I hated the gameplay. It was relatively moronic. It was very simplified and so on and so forth. But the part of me that loves Tron just kept going and just kept pushing and pushing and pushing, because it was just realistically there's that part of you that just wants to play through the world of Tron. And Tron 2.0 was the same kind of deal. It was like they tried to cram as much as they could, and you can see the love spilling out of every single scene that they were doing. They were pushing the hardware as far as they could with the money they had been given. And it's one of those things where it more than anything, it makes you sad, because it's not a great game in any way or form.
Didn't you play Alan Bradley's kid in the game? There was something about trying to find Laura, because she was hiding in a computer. Like, it really, like, the story itself, I thought, tied in really well. But I never played the game to see how it all worked out.
Which game?
Tron 2.0.
Tron 2.0. Yeah. Well, this is what I'm saying. It's like when you, everything, like every aspect, the storyline, the gameplay, and a lot of what I think the new visual style came into, came out of what Tron 2.0 had tried to do. They had tried to modernize what they had done in the original series, and they had made it a bit darker and a bit more, you know, sort of like obvious. And I thought it really worked. And I think that's where we got that trailer from, the one that got issued at Comic-Con, which we'll talk about later. But
absolutely.
I think all of that world kind of spawned from Tron 2.0, because Tron 2.0 was the first time we saw it done with love.
Yeah.
Like real love. Like that was the one that everybody turned around and went, look, it's a shit game, and you can find copies of it floating around in EB stores for like $2 now. But realistically, it was the one that sparked everyone again. And
I was about to say, it was about 2000, I think, from memory, when rumblings of a sequel to Tron kind of started to start again.
Yeah.
And everybody started to go, oh, maybe now is the time.
Tron,
by this stage, had become a cult success. Everybody knew Tron. It was iconic.
Yeah.
Whether it had dated or not, everybody knew the images from Tron. Everybody knew the light cycles. They knew the help me out, James. What are the ships called? The flying things?
The recognizers?
Thank you. That's the one I'm looking for. The recognizers. They understand.
And you know what? Since that point, anyone doing any kind of story, whether it was a comic book or attempting to do it on TV or whatever, cyberspace was going to look like Tron.
Yeah,
even like
much.
The TV show Automan. Even when he came out, you knew he came from the Tron world, even though it was kind of a ripoff.
Reboot, that's another one.
Reboot was fantastic.
Yeah, the Reboot was a CG TV series.
Yeah,
again,
Reboot.
Very much like Tron. It's really... really dated if you try and watch it there. But storyline-wise and everything like that, everything that was in that came from Tron. Yep. And, yeah, really well done. Like, that was another one. Yeah.
Yeah, so I think Disney was starting to get an itch, basically, to do this. But they really couldn't get it to work. Nobody could quite nail it, basically.
I think the problem is that it's the problem that happens with everything that goes cult, is the fact that no one understands cult bar the cult fans. Mm. And I think until you get the right team of people in the right place with the right love for the subject material, you'll never win the fans over. Because you can show a Tron trailer, but if people that don't like Tron didn't make it, we won't like it. You can very much tell that. And that's like that's where the problem lies for me, is like no one got it right. Like Tron 2.0 was kind of an okay, and then you started seeing posters show up in people's rooms when someone was a quote-unquote geek.
And I think there was also one of the big moves, I think, was the fact that as soon as Tron 2.0, that name came out, forget the fact that it was a game, that name resonated with Tron fans.
Damn right.
And people started to go, is there a sequel? What's that about? What's all this about? And they're not knowing it's a computer game. They just saw True Tron 2.0, you know? And everybody started talking about it. Enter the scene, Joseph Kosinski. Joseph Kosinski came about and was asked whether or not he would be interested in seeing if he could make this fly. Mm. I believe, if I'm not mistaken, this is his first feature film. I think he just done ads until this point. And he was he went off and he did a test reel. He just went off to see if he could actually make it work. Mm. And he did this test reel that was so mind-bogglingly staggering.
Fucking awesome, I think, is what you're looking
that
for.
Disney decided that it would be shown at Comic-Con just to gauge a reaction. It wasn't even to say there was a
sequel. You're talking about the one from, like, 3 years ago?
Yeah, 2008. Yeah. The one where he, where they have the light cycle chase, and then the guy gets knocked off, and he says it's only a game, and and then the Flynn's mask opens, and he says not anymore.
Yeah,
you know, which is of course is not the movie at all. It was just a test reel. It wasn't even supposed to be.
What's fascinating is it doesn't actually conflict with anything. Like that's an interesting teaser.
Absolutely. And you still got Jeff Bridges in the white, and you know the whole bit.
And I'm sorry, but realistically, every single nerd on the planet that saw that video just went, oh my god.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and that
was
the
thing. So well done.
Disney got the reaction that I guess they were provoking, which was that they wanted to just pop it in unannounced to see what would happen.
Yeah.
And everybody lost
And there's some guy that was in there filming it who I'm going to call Zapruder, who was way back in the back of the theater with an iPhone or something or recording it, and it was the worst copy ever, and it blew my mind how awesome it was.
And it got millions of hits on YouTube. I mean, it was just amazing how this thing just went. This went viral in its own right. And everybody went, this is just staggering what is going on here. And of course, what we ended up finding out was 6 months later, Disney released it as an official teaser.
Yeah.
They put titles onto it and they actually put it out. Just because they knew the fire was hot now. Something was cooking, you know? Yeah. And Kosinski went to work on Tron, at that time, Tron 2, which would later become Tron Legacy. Mm. So I guess that brings us to now. And I guess we really want to talk about, at this point, we've got James from Melbourne in our chat room saying it's like, what is it? Nostalgia, actually, at this point. So let's talk a little bit about the Tron Legacy experience. And let's go back to that first trailer and just say, Fox, what was your initial reaction when you saw that? Did you think this is it? God's come down to earth, you know?
I went to go see Alice in Wonderland in 3D. And the whole theater was crowded, and I just saw this thing come on, and suddenly I started feeling this techno music going. I was like, wait a minute, I'm going to see Tron in 3D previews. And I lost my shit, and someone probably had to call me down with a taser.
Yeah.
It's like after seeing the Avatar trailer for the first time in 3D, I was like, are you kidding me? This is the most beautiful moment of my life.
Yeah.
Then I was like, I have to wait till the end of the year. God damn it.
Oh, dude,
in fact, I liked Alice in Wonderland way more than I should have because it had the Tron trailer on it.
Dude, you missed out, Dave, at this end, man. Every movie we went to, but when we found out that the trailer was roaming around cinemas at the moment, every movie Dave went to for like 3 months, he would just be like, when the fuck are they going to show the Tron trailer? I remember every single movie before.
I remember the first movie we were sitting at in the Tron trailer, and it's like, yes!
I promised you that if I ever got any information about your dad, I'd tell you first, right? I was paged last night. Came from your dad's office at the arcade. So? The number's been disconnected for 20 years. 2 nights before he disappeared, he came to my house. He said he was about to change everything. Science, medicine, religion. He wouldn't have left that, Sam. He wouldn't have left you.
Alan, you're acting like I'm gonna find him sitting there working. Just, hey, kiddo, lost track of time.
Wouldn't that be something?
I was so excited for the whole project at that stage, though, because, I mean, like everyone that was excited about this, ever since I saw that first trailer and then I saw it come out second time at Comic-Con, you know, how it, like, hit again, and that's when we got the extra...
When we got the actual official teaser this time.
Yeah, so. When that came out, the things that just started bouncing around were just amazing. I mean, I told you from day dot when I first heard it that I was so excited about the fact that Daft Punk were on the project. And it's
And I was actually quite negative towards that.
Exactly, and I was trying to explain to you that, like, these guys have built their life on this thing. Everything they do, every reference in their music, every reference in their video clips, there is so much about Tron in what they do, and I was like, you guys have to understand, there is no better team in the world to handle this.
And my first thoughts when Josh talked to me about Daft Punk was, okay, they're going to contribute a couple of songs, it'll actually have a proper score, it won't be Daft Punk all the way through. And as it started to go through and it started to say music by Daft Punk, it's like, this is really going to happen. These guys are really going to do this. What did you think of the score, James?
Oh, I thought it was absolutely phenomenal. I actually went to a store and bought a CD of it just to have it in my car.
Oh, damn right, man.
Like, I think this music, my alarm I have is like this iPhone based thing. You hook a speaker up to it. My alarm is when he first goes into the arena and the music starts swelling. That's why I wake up every morning.
That is the best.
Fritz
way
has
to
asked
wake
this
up.
Question. He says, Fritz in our chat room said, question. In Australia, did you guys get the 2-CD deluxe Tron soundtrack? In the US, we only got the one disc. I bought mine on iTunes, so I don't know.
We didn't get it. We didn't get it. No.
Bought it on iTunes.
Yeah, no. I got it on iTunes. I was going to buy it in CD, but it came with the digital thing, and that was enough for me. I just wanted it now. I wanted it the day that it was available.
Yeah, I actually pre-ordered my copy of Tron Legacy soundtrack. I wanted it immediately. I had a pre-release of it, which we played 1 week prior to the film coming out, and we played a track from that on the show. Yeah. I remember Josh getting very nervous about that, going, should you be playing that? It's like, I don't care. This is what we do for a living here. You know?
And look, I mean, realistically, the thing I love the most about that soundtrack is it can be listened to as music and as a soundtrack.
And in fact, in many ways, it actually works
yeah.
even better. It's just a soundtrack.
Yeah, exactly. And
but knowing the movie so well, just listening to it, I can remember just all the scenes and what's supposed to be happening with all this music, and it's absolutely beautiful. It really works.
And like, I think that first moment when the song that is The Grid starts playing it in the film and you get his voice coming over, I just got goosebumps immediately. I was just like, oh.
The Grid. A digital frontier. I tried to picture clusters of information as they moved through the computer. What did they look like? Ships, motorcycles. Were the circuits like freeways? I kept dreaming of a world I thought I'd never see. And then, one day, I got in.
Because it's that realization that this is happening and that we're getting it.
The film has been criticized by several sources who have said basically it's one extended Daft Punk music video clip. What's your response to that, Fox?
I agree with him, and I don't think that's a problem. That's one way to certainly look at it. That's the best video I think I've seen since Thriller.
That is so good. I love that. Yeah, no, absolutely, man. Well done.
I wish I knew more about Daft Punk originally, because when they used to advertise it as like Tron Legacy, and now featuring Daft Punk, I'm like, I'm seeing Tron Legacy because that's the word Tron, not Daft. Why do you keep pushing these guys in my face? It's like, oh, there's a club scene, they'll be in it, and it didn't occur to me that they would be the perfect people for it.
Yeah, well,
so bad on me. I'm going to have to go through their back catalog now.
Well, what it is, man, is it's the same sort of thing that happens with, like, what's his name? The big guy that, God, the metal, I can't think of anything he's been in right now. I'm having a mental black. Gulliver's Travel, Jack Black.
Jack Black.
Jack Black being in the game Brutal Legend. It was
Brutal Legend,
It was like you don't sell it based on the fact that it's a game with metal in it. You sell it the fact that Jack Black is in it. Mm. And it was just trying to get more people involved, because you can understand that Disney were very worried about this. Like, I mean, they've been burned once, and they're taking a huge risk throwing it back out.
Now, and they're also spending this time around, I think, if I'm correct in saying, I think it was $170 million, the budget.
Yeah.
This is before...
I've heard around that, which is probably what the budget of the first one was.
Yeah.
Well, I was about to say, this is before prints and advertising. They're saying by the time you add in, I think they spent like another $100 million on advertising on this film. They promoted the crap out of Tron.
Yeah, because you wanted to sell it on the two levels. You wanted to sell it as the Tron, you know, sort of thing, but you also wanted to go, all right, look, let's get as many musos as we possibly can in the cinemas as well, so let's say Daft Punk's going to be involved. So I didn't hate that, because like you said, dude, I think that's the best way I've ever heard it said. It is like a giant video clip, but I don't have a freaking problem with that. I thought it was amazing.
I think it actually worked in its favor, in fact. I remember sitting there in the cinema just going, the relationship between image and music was so integrated. It was so fused together, probably more so than any film in the last few years. Mm. It's not just a soundtrack that's been added to help move things along. It is part of the landscape. It's part of the film, you know?
Yeah.
And I mean, I would say I'd compare that to like Jurassic Park, where I bought that soundtrack and was like, oh, I know this scene and this scene. Like, the music just fit in perfectly. The great thing Daft Punk managed to do was not only do everything digital when it had to be, but they had a whole orchestra backing open scenes, which was just stunning.
Mm. And it really does make it that much more impressive when you have that kind of thing behind them. Because, look, I like Daft Punk's music, but reality is that it is very repetitive. Mm. And outside their very pop hits, there are a lot of music where you're like, isn't this still the last song?
Yeah, actually, before Tron came out, about 6 months before Tron came out, I actually managed to get my hands on three previous Daft Punk albums. And I sat down and listened to them. And I actually got a little worried at that point, because I kind of listened to him going, oh, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know if this is going to quite... But then we started to get the rumors that Daft Punk was actually working with an 80-piece orchestra and all this stuff that they had never done before. And it's like, okay, well, let's give them the benefit of the doubt. I just got some numbers here. I was just looking up on Wikipedia, actually. I mean, we take everything with Wikipedia with a grain of salt. But It says here that the budget for the first Tron was $17 million. In 1982, put that in perspective, the most expensive film made at that time was Dune, which I think is reported to have cost anywhere between $30 and $40 million. And that was considered to be, oh my God, they're going to sink a studio. This thing costs so much money to make. So this is like half that budget. This is an expensive film. when you put it into perspective and say in 1977, Star Wars cost $13 million.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it was a lot of money, but I know that we've kind of done Tron 1, but like we were saying, one of the things that really stood out for me was the fact that that money is just etched into every frame, and I mean that as, you know...
Quite literally.
quite literally, because it's like, the way that they shot that film, it's like, there is so much work in it, and, you know, like, even if it has a whole bunch of problems, you can see every frame, people just kept working on this, they believed it was going to work, and it's like... I felt the same way about the new one. It was like there was no feeling. Like these people did it for themselves more than anything else. They did it for the fans.
Well, as Lisberger Studios were animators and they were doing this for themselves. Yeah.
Exactly. They were doing this to bring what they have always wanted to see onto the screen and bring it for us. Mm. And like, you know, it's one of those films, one of the few films where I turn the critic in me off and I just say, you know what, fuck it. I don't care what you guys think.
Yeah, and it's like it's interesting because when I watch Tron Legacy, there's actually, it's almost kind of like a schizophrenic experience. Because there are two sides. There's two sides to this story. One side of the story is from a fanboy, geek boy standpoint. Mm. I just went, oh my God, can I get fresh jeans at this point?
Yeah.
And this was the greatest thing since sliced bread.
Mm.
From the film lover in me, I sit there and go, my God, this film has flaws.
Mm.
You know, and so it's like trying to sort out my conflicting emotions. It's kind of why we're doing this show. Is to try and work out those conflicting emotions and say, do you just disengage?
Yeah, I'm sorry, but you do. Like, this is one of those films... Like,
let's start with the Fox for a second.
But was it that hard to do? Like, there are certainly some big issues with this whole concept that they have, but I kind of don't care. It's like, you know what? This is what's in front of me, and this is the most awesome thing I'm going to see probably for the next year.
Mm. It was a spectacle, but how would you compare, and put the fanboy aside for one second, though, and just look at it from a purely filmic point of view... How would you compare the spectacle of this last Christmas, Tron Legacy, to the Christmas prior with Avatar?
Hmm.
That's really rough because I'm such a Tron fanboy.
Yeah.
You know what? They're so on par with each other. It's just Avatar happened to be a hell of a lot longer and I think was a little more elegant with the 3D.
Yeah. Hmm.
I think it kind of brought that out, but Avatar didn't tell me a story I didn't already know. It just found a very beautiful way to bring it to me and made me really care about these people and this world and got me really interested in it. Tron picked up some pieces that I was just sort of letting go after a long time of never really having a sequel and said, hey, this is the world. Here's what we're picking up and check this shit out.
Mm.
It's like, holy God, this is just incredible.
I've got to say, like just, I'm sorry, man. Will you keep going?
I actually took a vacation right when it came out, and I ended up seeing it twice the same day, and I continued to see it throughout the week of vacation, like every day. Went to see it in IMAX 3D and just sat up front, and even just, it's not even just watching it, but the way they focus the sounds you've recognized or flew overhead.
Hold on. Come clean at this point. How many times have you seen Tron Legacy?
Yeah, dude.
Only five times.
Only five times.
Only
it was
five.
All pretty much within a single week.
I was just going to say, Dave, that I actually like feel kind of a prang of anger over that comment because I don't believe you can do that. I'm sorry, but I can't disengage the fanboy. The fanboy is all there is with this film. I am built as a gamer, as a film lover, as a geek. I am built on this film. I will not disengage
But the problem is that, as you say, you're built as a gamer, a film lover, and a geek.
Yeah.
Now, the problem is that the film lover and the geek run into conflict on this film.
No, because it's the same sort of thing as me watching... I go back, in my mind, to just enjoying the film for what it is. I don't watch Tron 1 because it's a good film. I watch Tron 1 because it's an amazing spectacle of digital effects, of, you know, sort of interesting, you know, sort of things that we had never done at the time. Like, I respect it on that grounds. And when I watch 2, I do the same thing. I'm like, visually, this is incredible. You know what I mean?
It's I was that kid again. I was 10 years old
exactly.
all over again.
And like, I mean,
and the movie was giving me something I'd never seen before once again, and I absolutely love that in movies.
I there was no part of me when I walked out of that cinema that was doing the film critic thing. I did that the next day when I calmed down. At the time, I walked out of that cinema as a 10-year-old.
I'm not saying at the time. I'm just saying in general when we look at that film. And we
I can't watch it like that. I've watched it again since. I don't watch it as a film critic.
That's fair enough.
And I'm like, I'm not judging. Don't misunderstand me. It's just that, like,
I'm conflicted because the fanboy geek in me, the fanboy, and Josh is about probably going to reach over and hit me at the moment, but the fanboy geek in me who can watch basically anything in genre and basically watch anything in genre and get something out of it, even something like Wolverine, where you sit there and go. His claws have popped out. Who cares? You know, who cares if they
Hold on. It's not in my contract. We're not talking about Wolverine.
I'm with you, man. This ain't going to happen.
I'm not going to get into reviewing it. I'm just talking about the fact
that... You can't start this fight without finishing it.
Shush for a minute. The point is that there's a fanboy who can sit and watch Fantastic Four and go, it's a crappy film, but there's something in there that I can have fun with.
Yeah.
There's part of me that can still watch X-Men 3 and go, it's a crappy film, but there's a Sentinel's head at the beginning. Who cares? You know what I mean? Whatever. The point is that the same thing with Tron, where you sit there and you watch it and go, yes, there's a scene in it that's exactly taken straight from Star Wars, and who cares, you know? And there's a scene in it where you know, Flynn's head looks like it's taken from, you know, a 1986, you know, Asylum film.
Yeah.
Because its effects are so ratty, but who cares, you know what I mean? And you sit there and look at it and go, so that there's a geek fanboy who sits there and goes, who's very willing to unapologetically give things a pass, is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Right, but then there's the other side of me, which is that true film lover who sits there and goes, "But it should have been
no."
You know,
I'm sorry, no, I don't. I never.
Are you talking technically about the film, like how, like the cinematography and stuff? Are you talking
story? I think technically, aside from the fact that and something we're going to talk about in just a minute, aside from the fact that I don't think they've fully achieved Clue. As well as they should have.
Yeah.
But I'll come to that in just a second. But aside from that, I think technically the film is second to none this year.
Yeah.
Absolutely second to none.
No, but
I think technically cinematography, 3D, visual effects, production design, sound, music, fantastically put together. The problems I have are story and structure, which are a bit of an issue with Tron Legacy.
Well, I want to flick over to Fox after this, but I just want to say, I don't know about you, Fox, but for me, I don't put that part of me on. Like, I will continue to watch this this film as the 10-year-old. And, like, I mean, we've talked it out, and I've done that once.
Mm-hmm.
And from now on, when people ask me, what do you think of the film?
It's awesome.
I will say it's awesome. And I will say it was the best sequel we could have possibly asked for out of this film, because I don't think you could have achieved more than what they did. Yeah, it may not be the perfect story, but I'm sorry. I've seen a hell of a lot worse films, and I don't think it deserves, what is it on IMDb, like 50% or something like that?
It's definitely higher than that.
Exactly. And this is my problem, is like, if you guys are going in there and you're expecting world-changing cinema, it's like, if you haven't seen the first one, then you should go back and do that. And if you have seen that and you still think that we should have had more than what we got.
See, you got to understand that the geek boy in me actually almost always wins over the film critic. So the geek boy in me is the one who saw Tron at the cinema and came out all ecstatic and pumped up on adrenaline, and is the one who's eyeing off the websites and basically saying, when do I get my pre-order in for the Blu-ray? All right? So there's no problem there.
Yeah. But like
I totally get that. Like you're saying, IMDb has Tron at, 50% or something? You know what? It's not technically a better film than The King's Speech.
No.
But I saw Tron 5 times, and King's Speech still hasn't had my money yet.
That's fair.
I'll fix that at some point, but it's like Tron has priority.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Okay. That's fair enough. Now let's talk about this. Let's talk about the technology of Tron for a second, because I posted a video up on geekactually.com yesterday. If you haven't had a chance to go have a look at it, you should have a look at this, which is behind the scenes visual effects on the Winklevoss twins from The Social Network. Now, Fox, I know you've seen The Social Network.
Yes.
And I was always under the impression, and I personally, I think the effects work of using Armie Hammer as both the twins was seamless. There was never once where I doubted it was two different people, right?
It never occurred to me that there wasn't. And I was like, it didn't occur to me until the end credits. It's like, so who played these two guys? There's just one. I'm like, wait, are you kidding?
Yeah. And wow, I remember leaning to Josh going during the film and said, Armie Hammer's doing such a good job. He goes, who's that? I said, he's the Winklevoss twins. Mm. And I think you were even surprised to find out that it was only one person. No,
absolutely.
Right? Well, and so I was always under the impression that they obviously shot two different elements, probably one in front of green screen, composite these in, you know, to make it all work. But the typical way you would do this, and it was just an exceptional job. I found out yesterday that it's not. I found out yesterday how they actually achieved the effect. And the way they actually achieved
it. He's an X-Men. hit them and there's two of them.
The way they actually achieved the effect was there was actually a different actor. They cast two people who were physically the same, and the other person played the other Winklevoss twin throughout the scenes. But Armie Hammer played both roles every take. So he would come in one set of clothes and play one twin, and then they would swap clothes, and then they would play the scene again with the other way. So whenever Armie Hammer had long passages of dialogue as either twin, it really is him.
Yeah.
Right?
Wow.
All the other scenes, they actually CG replaced Armie Hammer's face. Sorry, the other actor's face with a CG version of Armie Hammer's face.
Wow.
So that is actually another actor, but it's a CG face that has been used to replace his face. Now, I have gone back and looked at that film. It is seamless and perfect.
I never would have known that.
No, and I just look at it now and I go, that was made on a quarter of the budget of Tron. And my question is, why is it that
but the Winklevoss twins didn't accidentally invent light cycles and then Zuckerberg took them from them.
No. That's not my point. I'm talking about a purely technical level here, which is kind of, it's made me reevaluate one thing about Tron Legacy, which is, I actually think it's a little bit unforgivable.
Because we were really, really, when we first saw those shots of him on the face, we were like, wow, that's awesome. And I remember saying that. I was like, I didn't quite like the bit where he walks out, because I was like, it feels like a head on like a bobblehead.
And what we're talking about here is, of course, the young Jeff Bridges Clue character. Yeah. And it doesn't quite work. I mean, they nail it on a couple of occasions where he's not talking, and there's a couple of visuals where it works quite well. But on the most part,
I think
part,
that's the key, is when he's not talking.
That's it.
However, I'm sure they filmed the Winklevoss twin face completely different than how they tried it out on Jeff Bridges. And I can kind of see where it went and what they were trying to do. But I think they need a little more render time or come up with a different technique.
Or they need to talk to the other effects house and find out what their secret is. Because this is the same company that did Benjamin Button. And some of the face replacement in Benjamin Button was also exceptional. And they're not talking about just doing a face replacement where an actor wears makeup and then they change the face over. We're talking about a fully CG rendered face. This is not him.
Mm.
And that is, the Winklevoss twins are completely sold. Yeah. There is not a moment in that film where you sit there and go, oh, Uncanny Valley with the eyes, or the lip doesn't move right. They are both perfect at all times. And you look at it and go, we needed just a little bit more time or something with Tron. It doesn't quite work with Tron Legacy. And that was one of the effects they were selling the film on.
Yeah,
true. And with the exception of that, there is not a flaw in the other visual effects.
Yeah.
It's the only
In fact, the scene where he's walking around Flynn's hideout, where he's kind of looking around looking for clues, looking for clues. He looked real, as far as I was concerned.
Yeah.
Yeah, there were many sequences in it where I was really impressed. When he first does his reveal to the sun.
Sam, and I'm very, very happy to see you.
And when his helmet comes back, you actually see his hair flicking. I mean, perfect.
There's a lot of love on each scene. I think they did a really good job with it. It's just sad because it's like realistically the rest of it.
Yeah, and if they could have sold that as well as they sold the Winklevoss twins, wow, that would have been a technical achievement that people will be talking about in 2 decades from now. But already the seams are showing on Tron Legacy. People are already going, it doesn't quite look real, you know? And for 170...
Well, I've got some good news for you then.
Oh, Gil, tell me.
He was in a computer. That's actually just what he would have looked like.
Ah, the old cop.
I call
out.
That the surrogate defense.
Yeah, no. I've.
It's like if you bumped into Clue, he looks that weird. That's why you're like, dude, what the hell's wrong with him?
Okay. Yeah, it's just the technology.
The rest of the programs never would have noticed it.
Yeah, his technology hasn't been updated yet. It's not quite as good as the rest.
Yeah, he's still on a 1.0 model.
Yeah, he's a 1.0 model. He's that guy that refuses to update, or he's that guy who couldn't update it because one of the updates corrupted.
There you go. That's what it is. Okay, that makes logical sense.
That's what I'm using.
He
I'm
tried
sticking
to jailbreak to it. Himself. It went messy. He couldn't go back.
All right. Yeah. So, Fox. Now we come to that moment. Where I want to hear. And I know I'm kind of throwing you on the spot here, but I want to hear your philosophies of Tron. You were going pretty deep on that Real Junkies episode. About the relationship of the ISOs and stuff like that. And I just want to know, can you just fill us in a little bit of the way you were feeling?
I think first off, it should be known that Tron put a character inside of a computer about 17 years before the Matrix did. Mm-hmm. And for some reason, people could accept the Matrix way better than they could accept Tron. I'll accept that. We're talking two different time periods of computers. Because pretty much the internet wasn't even there in the original Tron. Now we've kind of matured, we get it. You can even look back and see what Tron was doing and fill in blanks that you didn't know then, now. But I love this idea that was put into this movie that as an adult, I see different things in Tron that I didn't see as a kid. One of which was Flynn trying to get back all the stuff that he did for ENCOM that was stolen from him. And once he got it back, he had gone inside a computer and found out everything he made. He was a god. And I have a feeling this kind of changes you. This isn't something that can easily get into a movie, but I think Tron Legacy got into it when it kind of showed his Zen philosophy and approach to everything. But he had a huge sandbox to create the perfect system in, and he took it. And as he kept playing with it and molding it, and he made a copy of himself. He didn't take Clue from the first movie, which was a program, a hacking program. He copied himself, including all of his flaws, which is a phenomenal thing to be able to do. I don't know how you do it, but if you can get into a computer, why the hell not? You can clone yourself. I mean, you're already zeros and ones by that point anyway. So go ahead. Clone yourself. Let him take over while you head out in the real world for a while. He'll be inside for, I don't know, 50 hours while you're outside for an hour, however that ratio works. But this idea that he was using this whole place to find a way to make a perfect world, I kind of picture it as he made SimCity, except it looks like Tron and you get to live in it. And all the women are hot.
You could argue that he was actually kind of an idealist because he'd never actually tested it in the real world. Because you think the first Tron, even though there was no internet, was still a networked company. And all the...
I think that was all ARPANET stuff. I think it was internet. It's just that's what it wasn't. It wasn't called that then.
No. Because, I mean, because he was talking about tapping into the Pentagon and stuff like that. But it was pretty much a closed or smaller network because there was no huge internet at that point. And each program represented a user, basically. Whereas in Tron Legacy, this is a closed world. Every one of those programs is Flynn.
Yes.
It's not Flynn, but he's responsible for putting him there.
Well, he wrote them.
Yes. The same way I tend to think of SimCity. When, as you're playing SimCity, it has to populate the world. He probably has like a population generator that would just fill in everything.
Kind of like Peter Jackson's massive program for creating the 10,000 orcs at Helm's Deep, right? He just goes...
Exactly like that.
I need 50,000 people here. Just fill it out, you know? Randomly generated.
I bet if he bumped into more people, he would have realized he was facing at least... There's only like 20 people. He would just keep bumping into the same people all the time.
And see, if Clue hadn't have gone, theoretically, going by this theory, if Clue hadn't have become the megalomaniac that he did as early as he did, he had waited just that little bit longer, that network may have eventually been connected to the internet, and then he could have taken over the world digitally.
I was trying to look at... The ISOs didn't make sense to me at first when they introduced them into there. It's like, why would they be these homeless people coming out of the wasteland? Why the hell do you have a wasteland? Like, I really want to know why and how he built everything, but... I started thinking he builds this whole digital scape. It's just kind of this wasteland. He purposely put the city there, so it's out in the borders of all the programming would this miracle happen.
Well, the wasteland in general kind of confused me. The whole idea of off-road vehicles and stuff. I kind of went, this is kind of pushing logic to just a slightly different degree.
I disagree. I mean, that area to me is something like, as someone that has done hacking, yes, I will admit I have done a bit of hacking. It is kind of like, it's the back end to everything. You know, it's the stuff behind the programs. It's all of your ins and outs, your OS.
Yeah, but we know as computer people, and this is where we have to suspend disbelief, I know, but we know as computer people that everything, even the back end, is still ordered. You know what I mean? It's like there's still, because computers
yes,
work
but
in
the,
a logic
the glowy but it's blue a very... world would be the operating system that you interact with. That's yeah. how it's interpreting
that's
that
the
for
user
you
interface.
Interact with the
No,
Wesley.
But like, I yeah, exactly. And that's what I'm saying. It's like back in the day, it would have been the DOS behind the Windows. Nowadays, it would have been the BIOS and the, you know, sort of the command and the, you know, sort of your open terminal based.
Although, considering that he'd been in there for 20 years, it probably was the DOS behind the Windows.
Well, yeah, no, it's possible. But at the same time, Dave, think of Terminal. That's what I'm talking about. It's like it is that black empty box that goes in behind everything that is running. All of your visual eye candy that is on your computer, your Mac OS or your Windows-based system, it's going behind that.
Right.
And it's all the stuff in there. That's why I could buy that.
Here there be command line.
Goddamn right.
Now, I've got to say, did you read, and you shouldn't have to read anything to watch a film. I understand that. But did you read, Fox, the Tron Legacy miniseries, comic book series?
No, I didn't.
Because there's actually
I knew it was out there, but I was kind of ambivalently trying to stay away from it. The previews were good enough for me. I didn't want to learn something by accident.
Well, the reason why, I mean, maybe you should go and have a read of it now, though, now that you've seen the film, because it actually does go into the whole ISO story.
Yeah.
And it actually goes into the whole discovering of the ISOs and the development of the ISOs, and it goes through Clue and Flynn fighting about what to do with the ISOs. And so all that stuff you see in the flashback, that really quick flashback in the movie, is expanded upon in the prequel comic book, the two-part prequel comic book. And it's worth
it. This would upset me now because I already made up a story in my head to make that all work out. Because it will explain the movie. And if I read this and it's not what's in my head, I'm going to be like, oh, come on.
But maybe it will be.
Maybe it will be the same. You never know. Mm. It could be that clear a story. I think the ISOs are an interesting concept. I think the idea that basically they're a self-replicating program. Wait a minute, we've got that now. They're called viruses.
Yeah, except they come out like the Fifth Element.
Yes.
So what I started getting out of this was that Flynn was trying to make this perfect system. I would actually kind of argue that his world is much smaller than the world we see in the first Tron movie, because we did see a massive networked mainframe setup. We just didn't see too much outside of MCP's control. Mm-hmm. But there seemed to be more going on. You really needed a solar sail to get to the IO tower. Like, there was just a lot more happening. But back then, they weren't sophisticated enough to draw up tech manuals and a map to give it to us. Agreed. I think they could probably do that now with this movie.
Well, and also you think about where this world was. It's in the back end of the arcade, and it's in a single computer. It may have just been that one computer.
It was his little experiment.
And I mean, that's the way you feel about it. It does. It feels like an isolated one city that isn't connected and never wanted to be. It was like it was his world. He was playing God, like you said, and he was trying to expand on what he had created. And I thought that that worked really well. I never had a problem with that in the film. I thought that was a kind of cool concept, that this guy had gone, I'm stuck here. We've blown up everything that was. Mm-hmm. Let's try and create something. And they sit down and the three of them try and make this world. And I thought that was a really cool story.
Yeah.
Again,
I'm sure Steve Jobs is doing this right now. Like, this is based on something.
Why do you think we never see him? And do you think when he comes back, he's so small?
This is why he's taking the leave of absence. He's gone into his little world.
What really locked into me was, even though I couldn't quite parse what the ISOs were meant to be, why they should look the way they do, I love this idea that he suddenly realized, you know, I'm trying to make a perfect system, but I accidentally made perfection in some way. And I wanted to get more into why that they're ignorant, but they're wise beyond their years, this whole thing. Mm. And he kept trying to tell Alan Bradley, I'm going to change everything. And I suddenly realized, you know what, this whole plan to bring something out of Tron City, out of his mainframe, was bringing the ISOs into our world and being like an ambassador between them and us in our world. And I thought that was a really brilliant idea that I never expected out of Tron. And he's absolutely right. It would change things dramatically. He created life. He would have brought them forward. They seem to have some crazy-ass knowledge about things. They didn't get into it. Maybe a new movie would. But on the whole, I love this idea.
It's interesting that you say that he inadvertently created perfection. I actually took something slightly different out of it. The lesson, I think, didn't Flynn learn the lesson that the more you try and make something perfect, the further you fall from perfection? And the fact that the ISOs formed out of his perfection showed that you can never be 100% perfect. Well,
no, but I think...
Because something will crop up.
I think Flynn was more interested in the concept of creating life. He was the guy that wanted to take what we had done digitally.
Hmm.
And he is, like we were saying, he is the spirit of the 70s. He's the spirit of that really kind of like... It's just beautiful what we've made, and there are those scenes that
bio-digital jazz, man.
Yeah, exactly. It's a great line, and the thing that's about it is when the ISO's formed, that's the two parts of him. Clue is that guy that was striving for perfection because that's what he had told him they were trying to do. And on the other side, you've got him that's turned around and gone, far out, dude. I just created life. Like, stuff spawned without my knowledge. He's... completely okay with that. Well, that's what I'm saying, because
he started to, I think the lesson he learned was that you can never strive for 100% perfection.
But he realizes that at that point, whereas Clue couldn't learn that because he hadn't taught him to.
Mm.
And it's like that was his mistake, is the fact that he had created someone, but he had changed. And it's that thing that you can't really create. He's created this image of himself, but it can never be him because it's never going to have that knowledge that can accept that.
Mm.
Yes, I don't think Flynn was ever trying to create life. The ISOs were just completely a surprise to everybody.
Mm.
Like in the scene that they show in the movie, it looked like they were building the blueprints for the arena that his son ends up getting stuck in at that point. They were off doing some other shit. They were just standing on a bluff, and they were looking down. It was like, we need to build this. It was like SimCity. We need to build this building here, and who the hell are these people? Well, it kind of changes the game. And it was weird, but... he must have come out and kind of thought about what the hell does this mean, pop back in, talk to some people. Clue, I kind of got the feeling, probably wasn't progressing. Like, he wasn't learning things the same way that Flynn was. He was just a copy from that moment in his life. And he saw these things as not part of that system. He was concerned with the people, you know, the programs in the city, and running the city.
Clue was just running his program. His program was... from Flynn's own programming, was to create the perfect world.
Yeah.
And the ISOs didn't fit that because they were an unpredictable, uncalculable object that showed up in his world that he couldn't control. So therefore, they had to be eradicated.
Well, he didn't understand the concept of life.
No.
And that was the problem, is the fact that Clue takes these things the same way you would a normal people. He's looking at them and going, be them what they are, these people are... real things.
You could draw a conclusion or at least an analogy between Hal in 2001 and Clue in the sense that they're given conflicting instruction sets. Hal doesn't go crazy because he's psychotic. Hal goes crazy because he's told two different things, doesn't know how to process it, and does the only logical thing that he can think of to complete it.
Yeah.
And that's the same with Clue. Clue is, he's completing his program in the only logical way he can see, which is, you want perfection, this is how we achieve it, you know? Yeah. Eradicate everything else in my path, you know?
And it was fine when programs listened to him. And I have a feeling part of it came from the fact that he really liked having Flynn's favor. I mean, Flynn and Tron and Clue all hung out together.
And then
suddenly Flynn has become obsessed with the ISOs, and he's off running around with them, and Clue's on his own. And now here's just Flynn and Tron. He's like, hey, am I still tasked with the perfect system?
Yeah.
Kind of. Get them, boys.
And Tron, of course, would always take Flynn's side, which is one of the reasons why that conflict would arise.
Yeah, exactly.
And this is one of the things that I thought was kind of interesting. It's like, I wonder if Alan Bradley just gave him a copy of Tron, or is that the Tron that was in the old NCOM database? And then
according to the
took some of those computers out and built them into the basement of his arcade in the 80s.
According to the comic book prequel, he imported it from the old grid.
He
brought the program over.
So there you go.
Okay.
Question.
And I have a feeling that this Tron world runs on a different operating system, which is why your suits don't look the same, which is perfectly fine with me.
Well, it's redesigned in Flynn's image, basically.
Mm.
They would just have clothes. I mean, if it was just Flynn. Like, I was kind of bugged out by the whole idea of them having clothes. I just thought, you know, that's just you. Like, I'm not too worried about how to put the shit on me. But
that's just the progress of computers now, because now they can actually have multiple layers and stuff. You see,
I actually bought the novel to the original movie, and they start getting into the whole edited scene out of the original where Tron and Yuri go to her apartment.
I've seen
it. They decide to make out, and she takes his clothes off, and I was like, wait a minute,
She puts on a skimpy dress. Yeah, it's actually on that Tron disc that you got, that 20th anniversary. They show the clip.
Yeah, there's just no sound or something to it, but that totally threw me off. But it kind of got into this idea that at the time, Sark had been draining power from the grid to power all his people. So she had an apartment that was plain, and you had to, like, get power to just have a couch. They had to put your couch away and then get a bed or something. And it was a really interesting idea. I wish they'd kept in, but the whole idea they were actually wearing clothes, that threw me off. Yeah. But I didn't mind that in this.
I actually didn't mind it so much. Yeah, as I say, in this film, I kind of took all the things like clothes or any of that sort of stuff. I took it as just it's an update. It's like, you know, this is the computer. It's not exactly 20 years later because he's been stuck there for so long, but it is the computer several years later.
Well, also there's the...
What I've actually read was that he's been stuck in there for equivalent of 1,500 years.
Yeah, I read 1,000, but yeah, it's something like that. Yeah, because it's the cycle time, the cycle difference.
Yeah, and I don't know. I put the clothes down to the fact that, like, you do have individuality of programs now, and, you know, like, things react different ways. And, of course, there is a certain level of AI in most programs now. And the fact that it will, you know, like a spell checking and so on and so forth. I mean, I know that I'm getting a little technical now, but what I'm saying is everything has a little bit of its own mind.
How awesome would spell check have been on these guys?
Just trying to make a point, but all right.
No, I think it's great.
All right, I have to make a tangent here for a hot second.
Sure.
I really hate when I'm typing and I see the little red squiggly line form under a word I haven't completed yet, and it psychs me out. It's like, how do you know I don't know how to spell this word? You let me finish,
no.
And then... Oh, I hate that.
I like better when you type the word and it's got the red squiggly line under it, so you click on it and say, okay, what's the word? What word do you think it is? And it goes, no suggestions. Like, then why are you giving me a red squiggly line, you bastard?
It just completely psychs me out. I can't, like, write the word now. Like, I can never spell millennium. I guess my computer knows that, so as soon as I get to MI, it's like, no, you already spelled it wrong. Like, you understand context, but you don't understand. You can't help me with this word.
And we're supposed to. And we're supposed to accept that we can build an entire artificial world, and a spell check can't even work.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, so let's wrap this up with our thoughts on, and this could go on for a while, but let's wrap this up with our thoughts on a proposed Tron sequel is in the works. They actually,
yes, please.
They've been sitting there basically waiting for a magic number to tick over. I don't know what the magic number is, but apparently we're very, very close for its box office and numbers. And you know, once it hits Blu-ray, it's going to make another $100 million right there. So,
Lee Wayne was telling me that we're already going to get like a teaser preview or something on the Blu-ray. I think that number might have already been passed.
I've heard that as well, that it's supposed to be some sort of teaser.
Oh, they would have made it by now either way.
Yeah. So where do we think the sequel's going to go? You can start us off, Fox.
Yeah.
I would like – this is one of those things that kind of worried me because once in Legacy, at some point when Clue said he wants to come out, I was like, you know what? There's no way I want to see anything in here come outside. They would just lose me. It would be like The Matrix. I really wasn't that interested in the real world of The Matrix. I like original inside the computer world. I don't mind that being a stressor to keep them to stay in. I'm a little worried that they might do that in the third one, but I would like to see Dillinger's son get involved, that somehow he wrote this Flynn OS 12, revamped it, NCOM OS 12, and wanted to sell it instead of giving it out for free. I love all that stuff too, this idea of the free internet, net neutrality and stuff like that, that is very current and relevant. And that was just kind of right at the beginning to be there if you wanted to see it or not. I would like to see young Dillinger try to get some sort of revenge, maybe go into their network, maybe Flynn's son is grabbing up the computer from the lab, download it onto his thumb drive, because that computer is old as shit, could fit on a 64 gig thumb drive, and then bring it over to NCOM. And I mean, he knows computers. He hacks shit all the time, apparently, rides motorcycles, so he's cool. and somehow just gets involved with the son. We've heard rumor that the original Dillinger would be awesome to see. I mean, he just went to prison. They didn't kill him.
Well, I've actually...
got involved...
Just to throw it in there, I've actually heard rumors kicking around that David Warner has actually has been in talks.
Yeah, no, I've heard that as well.
I've heard rumors. Awesome. I've heard rumors that he's in talks to come back, and I've also heard rumors that a character of Cold, and I think they meant Rom. If you remember Rom, the one that derezzed, they kept saying this. Kept saying in this article I was reading, the character Ram would be back, but I think it's Rom they're actually talking about.
I would like to point out a few things that I'm not sure whether they slip past other people. Killian Murphy's cameo seems a little bit...
You mean I've been saying it wrong all this time?
Yep.
Yeah, so was I. I actually saw him interviewed, and he did confirm it was Killian. It's Celtic.
Yeah.
I blame the Celts / Celts.
Yeah, exactly.
I would like to say straight out the gate that cameo seems a little too planned for my liking. I don't like how short that was, and I think that's been a
You don't put Killian Murphy in for a 30-second cameo unless you've got something planned.
Yeah, especially right now. I think we're going to see a return of him, and I think he's going to be a much bigger character.
Yeah.
I've got that as a thing. I totally agree with you, man. I think that they will. I actually don't fret because I don't think they're going to bring Tron into any aspect of Tron into the real world. But yes, I very much see either an internet-based thing. So this is what you do with a good third movie if you're going to do it right. I'm not saying it's going to work, but what you do is you completely vamp up the stakes. So you either throw them straight onto the internet or you throw them into MCOM. I think MCOM's the better thing because I think internet is a little bit too large.
How about this for a concept, though? What if you, and now I haven't heard anything like this, but it just popped in my head when you said that. Mm. What about if Killian Murphy and his dad are trying to bring back something like the MCP program, which can take control of everything, right? Mm. They put it into the NCOM computer system to help get it out onto the network because we've already got this powerful system, using maybe even Flynn's own software, his own operating systems to tap into it. Flynn realizes that this has to be stopped, firewalls NCOM.
Yeah.
Gets Cora and him into the system, not Flynn, I shouldn't say Flynn, the son, Sam, and Cora get into the system, and it's all a race against time to stop the MCP from actually getting out of the NCOM network.
Goddamn right. Yeah, no, that was my second point.
I don't know if the MC architecture would fit well today. I think they should accidentally make Stuxnet, and Sam and Cora have to stop that.
I say MCP because we're using something
that's what we're thinking of, yeah.
But some sort of master control.
Yeah, yeah, no, I think inside the thing, and I think to make the world a lot more dark.
Yeah,
I think would be like consistent with what we've seen from their style, and also
I did like how dark Legacy was. It was like with the stormy clouds and everything, and it even rained in there. Like I really liked these ideas that they had.
And
it doesn't make sense, but if he's trying to mirror the real world,
he
that
served
kind of
a roast poor a roast pig. Nothing made sense.
No, but the other thing I wanted to say was I think in the third one we're going to see a full blown version of the scene with Flynn reprogramming. I think we're going to see a really heavy level of that. We're going to see
Sam go crazy.
We're going to see full blown versions of what we all wanted to happen in that place.
Yeah.
Like when he first changed that room and everything just went away, we were all like, oh my God, this is going to be amazing. I think 3 would be the one to do
that.
Yeah,
we need to see
in.
User power.
Yep, we need to see the user just totally fuck
more
up
so
the
than,
world.
Ever, than ever. And I was arguing on our podcast about it, on the Real Junkies podcast, that the user powers are much more muted and they had a reason that Flynn wasn't using his. Mainly because it seemed to backfeed to Clue and made him more powerful. But he could have told Sam, but Sam didn't die. You know, programs are really delicate in Tron Legacy. You just punch them and they fall into sugar cubes. You can whack the crap out of one of them in original Tron, and they just fell over and got mad
yeah,
and got up again.
That's just modern day, man. It's just people aren't as tough as
they things aren't built to last now.
Yeah, no.
Fritz in our chat room has said, Dillinger takes over the internet. Tron leads a battle to free the internet. Flynn rides down on a white horse bearing a glowing staff and a longer beard.
I don't remember
screaming, you shall not pass.
Sorry?
Screaming, you shall not pass.
You shall not pass. That's right.
Yeah, no. I'm sorry, dude. No,
I would like to see Cindy Morgan show up.
Oh, Fritz has also pointed out that it's all Chinese goods now. That's why they fall apart so easily.
Oh, okay. Is that what it is? Oh, cold. Low.
Cold. Cindy Morgan, I would like to come back as well. I'm not even in the Tron world. I would like to see her in the real world.
Yes, her character. I liked what they were doing with her character in the video game, but what I'm hearing is the video game just isn't a good way to tell that story. She's basically dead in the Tron 2.0 kind of spinoff world. I thought that's why she wasn't in here. I thought this was actually a sequel to that created world. But apparently it's not.
I think she could still be around, I guess. In fact, was there any mention of her at all in Tron Legacy? Not even seeing her, a mention of her?
No, but there was like a fake NCOM briefing where Bruce Boxleiter and Cindy Morgan kind of came out and had like a Tony Stark moment where they're talking to the press, and they both basically said they're married. There just apparently wasn't a place for her in the movie.
Right. Okay.
Oh, okay.
So there's like a real world moment where they played the characters, but there's nothing where she was mentioned in the movie.
But is that actually in the film?
No. No. It's just something that Disney did.
Right. Okay. So there is a possibility that we could bring Cindy Morgan back for a next film.
Yeah. I hope so.
Ooh, me too.
That and I would really like the character who played Ram, the actor that we find out that after Flynn got out and he was really upset that this program died and he couldn't save him, he just went and hired that dude to work in it.
Well, I think that's what's happening in the sequel, because I've heard that actor is coming back. So I've heard that actor is coming back. Now, this could just be rumor speculation. I don't know. I haven't got any facts on this. This is all just rumor and speculation. But I've heard rumor of David Warner. I've heard rumor that the sequel will have something to do with the Dillingers, father and son. I've heard rumors that, as I said, the Ram character will be back. And I've heard rumors that Bruce Boxleitner will be back. So, and I've also heard rumors, of course, that Jeff Bridges will not be back. He's finished.
Well, there you go.
I feel good with that, because it would cheapen the moment when he doesn't come back. It's like, oh, crap, okay.
Yeah, I think he's finished.
I mean, we would want him to, but, you know, I think it's better off if we don't.
I think this film acted as a handoff from father to son, and I think that's fine. I think we're done with
and
that.
And I think it works so well for that, personally. But again.
But we're also, Fritz, you know, I often think that the world that Tron is in is slightly more advanced than our world, so I keep thinking of, like, the Fringe alternate world, where they have things a little ahead of us. And whatever Flynn had created by accident, by allowing you to use this laser and get inside a computer, that never seemed to spin off anywhere. But with Sam Flynn out knowing all this stuff, and he's CEO of this company, the spin-off technology could be extraordinary.
Mm. Well, and you've also got to think that he has his entire father's wealth of knowledge on a USB key. You know,
yeah.
I mean, he has his entire father's wealth of knowledge, plus everything to do with that system, plus every scrap of information that was off that system sitting on that key. Mm-hmm. So he has everything.
Yeah.
So
I would be remiss in not mentioning that one of the things I really liked about Tron Legacy was how much it mirrored the original movie, that there was a lot of symmetry between the movies.
And on that note, I'll say that was a big door.
Yeah, seeing stuff like that. I mean, those little nods to the fans. But, like, he gets sucked in and put on the grid. And that's pretty much what happens to Flynn right off the bat in the first movie. And just kind of the pacings. Here's, like, where the slow moment is. Here we got the solar sail moment. Like, all these little pieces all fit together. But even within Legacy, there are these mirrored moments. Like, we see Sam lives in the original garage that NCOM started in, the Dumont garage, keeping an eye on NCOM at a distance. And Flynn in the computer lives in his hideout in a cave looking out over at the End of Line Club.
Keep watching Tron City. Yeah,
absolutely. That's very interesting. Yeah.
Man, this has been
awesome. There was one of my things, I feel stupid for not having realized this, but I liked Bit in the first movie. I was like, why wasn't there a Bit in this movie?
I said the same thing. I missed Bit.
Hold it right there.
Yes.
You mean yes?
Yes.
And all you can say?
No.
Oh, anything else?
Yes.
Positive and negative, huh? You're a Bit.
Yes.
Well, where's your program? Isn't he gonna miss you?
No.
I'm your program.
Yes.
Another mouth to feed.
And Greg said, well, that was the thing he was playing with in his hands in his apartment.
Yeah.
Yeah, but
that little Rubik's Star thing. That would be a Bit.
But we wanted to talk.
No, I'm sorry, I didn't, okay? You guys are obsessed because in the 80s, we had to have some sort of small, mechanical, twitching, screaming, annoying owl or freaking R2-D2.
I'm not asking for a mechanical owl.
Yes, you are. You're asking for Bit, which was... No, I'm sorry. Bit, I'm so glad it was.
But we
Bit.
Wanted to hear them say, yes. That's what Fritz says in our chat room.
Ban.
Oh, that thing was funny, but there wasn't that level of funny in the movie, so
it
couldn't really be used for that. I just sort of thought that, like, Flynn just locked it in stone and just kept this little thing around. But then in the beginning of the movie, during the arena, you see Clue playing with those little two massage balls in his hands, and I started thinking, well, Clue has these little things that he plays with in his hands, and Flynn's got the little bitty play. There's that symmetry again where the characters are kind of doing similar things.
Mm. Yeah. Yep.
And it's just kind of there in the background, and I really love how they did that.
Now, I have to just throw one disappointment with the film out, and I think you guys will probably agree with me, was that we introduced Flynn's light cycle, which, of course, was a classic light cycle from the original film. And we even have Korra say it's still the fastest thing on the grid. You know, we have all this buildup, and then they never really did anything with it. I was really hoping we were going to have this massive light cycle chase or something.
It won't come out?
But I'm saying in this film...
I get the feeling this was always a plan.
Yeah.
I don't think they set this thing up to fail. I don't think there was a way you could make it fail with the amount of stuff that they've put into it. Like, I mean, with Daft Punk doing the soundtrack, with the soundtrack becoming, like, the most popular soundtrack ever. Like, everyone I know has that soundtrack. Even people that don't listen to soundtracks have that soundtrack because it's just such a piece of music. It's a really well-made piece of music. And then you've got the movie itself that even, like you said, it's past that mark. And if it hasn't, we haven't even hit DVDs. We're not hitting the original Tron or the remake Tron. We're going to get both of those at the same time. All of those sales are going to go. This was always going to happen. Mm. That's the feeling I've had ever since I walked out of that cinema, that we were always going to have a third one. And I think that they've been planning this ever since the start of the first, the second one.
So what do you think their magic number is? They're sitting at the moment currently at $383 million worldwide. $170 million budget plus another $100 million, let's say, for P&A.
I just think they're waiting until DVD hits to start. That's all I think that's happening. I think that the number's already crossed. Because, I mean, if you've made your money back and you haven't even hit DVDs, online, or original Tron sales, the second that goes online, you're going to have your money. You'll have your money on day one. I'm sorry, but is there anyone in this conversation right now that is not going to buy both of those on day one? Except
I'll buy all three. I'll buy the 3-disc version, the 4-disc version, and the 5-disc version, the cereal, and the underwear.
And that's why I like you.
I'll be buying the Blu-ray of original Tron and Tron Legacy.
Damn right.
On day of release. Hmm. And then I will immediately give away my copy of Tron on the show.
Yeah, and it's a really cool copy too.
It's the regional anniversary edition. We'll give that away on the show.
So. Yeah, we could even give that to
unless it has special features that are not on the Blu-ray.
Yeah.
And in that case, I'm keeping it.
Well, we'll see.
I can't imagine that, but the Tron 20th edition is like, it's totally out of print.
Yeah, no, it's gone.
I had a hard time trying to find it.
Now, this was the big push from Disney when they actually, we did this on the show, when we talked about this on the main show, Disney actually pulled every existing copy of Tron off shelves, out of digital release, everything, about 6 months prior to the release of Tron Legacy, because they were worried that young kids would get turned off Tron Legacy if they saw the original. So they literally pulled it. Apparently the Blu-ray has been ready for release on the original Tron for a few months now, but they just didn't release it.
That almost makes sense.
So it was a big push on their behalf to get everything. They took it off all the shelves. They recalled it.
What I said is it's true, and I'm sorry, but Tron to me, when I talk about it as like from a business model, I think about it the same way I think of a video game. Because I'm sorry, it's got the same mentality, the same stigma, the same style. And realistically, I get that because I know that the amount of video games I sell where there's a long period between original and sequel, you cannot sell the original to someone if you want them to buy the sequel. Because they'll play it and they'll just be like, graphics aren't good enough. And this is what this is what people are going into the movie for. They're going into amazing special effects and amazing budgets. And when they see Tron 1, they're like, I've got better video games than this behind me in a cabinet. Yeah. I'll just watch one of those. And it's like,
that renders on the fly.
Yeah.
You know, I read somewhere, it might have been like Blaster.com or Ziffy Wire or whatever the hell it's called now, that they were supposed to try to release original Tron back in theaters, but like a special edition version where they cleaned up everything, which I wasn't sure how I felt about, but I wanted to see it, and that never happened. And now I'm wondering, maybe is that what they're going to do Tron on Blu-ray? Is this idea still out there?
I think that would be an amazing experiment. I think to see Tron, as long as, and I've always stood by this with the Star Wars, when they did the special edition versions of Star Wars and stuff as well, I have no problem with George Lucas wanting to tinker with his baby as much as he wants to tinker with it. It's like creative masturbation for him. Okay, he can do that as much as he wants, as long as the original Star Wars is still there for us to see. You know,
look, don't put a bus engine in your Honda Civic; it'll look stupid. I think that's what he did in Episode 4.
Well, five said.
And six, I didn't have a problem with.
Well, and that's fine. But I mean, there's certain add-ins that he did, and this isn't a Star Wars show, but there's certain add-ins that he did that I think work really well. The boosting up of Mos Eisley Spaceport, some of that stuff was pretty good. Boba Fett, sorry, Jabba the Hutt was terrible, you know? Mm. It's like, some things work, some things didn't, and that's fine. It's his film, he owns it lock, stock, and barrel. If he wants to, you know, masturbate it and massage it all he wants, that's fine, he can do that.
Yeah, but once you release it on DVD special edition, that was still different than the special edition that was in theaters, and that is just bizarre to me. There's eight versions of the wrong one now.
Yeah, absolutely, and as I say, if he wants to keep doing this, that's what George does, but the original must always be there for us as a piece of history, if nothing else, should always be there for us to play with or to watch, you know? Yeah, yeah. And that's the version that, for me, the 1977 release of Star Wars is Star Wars. Yeah. Special editions are great, and they're fun to look at and all the things that he's added, but Star Wars was the version that came out. And unfortunately, it was only a few years ago that he finally relented and gave us those original versions on DVD as a bonus feature to his special editions. But he didn't even bother putting them into 16:9. They were flat 4x3, just letterboxed. But, you know, he said, well, if
didn't they come off the laser discs or something?
I believe so. And he didn't clean them up. And he basically said, well, you want them so bad, here they are, damn it. It was almost like he was mad at us for wanting those. And so he just kind of threw them
away. Why don't you understand why I'm trying to make things better?
I know, exactly. And so I'm down.
Han didn't shoot first. Han shot. That's all.
That's all that matters. Yeah, Han shot. Yeah. Now, I'm down for the idea, just like they did with the original Star Trek series, where they took it and they gave it updated special effects and cleaned it up and gave it Dolby print. Because what they do is
That surprisingly did not offend me at all. And I'm a huge Star Trek fan.
Not at all. And it looked fantastic. And on DVD, both versions. Mm. You can watch the classic, or you can watch the revamp, you know? Mm. And I'm down with that. If they want to take Tron and completely strip it of its effects, put in a whole bunch of brand new digital effects, as long as they're still within the style of Tron, but all updated, and then release a DVD that's got both versions, I would buy that in a heartbeat.
Yeah.
You know? Absolutely buy that in a heartbeat. Love to see Tron with updated effects, as long as I still have my original Tron.
Yeah.
You know?
All right.
I'm kind of a historian in that sense, and the fact that film is film. That's why I'm so against colorizing as well. And I don't mind colorizing if you're going to give me both versions. But if you're just going to take away the black version and black and white version and put colorizing, I'm not happy with that. You know?
No, I like to have things in original. And if it's in another language, I'd prefer to hear it subtitled. I'm a purist when it comes to that stuff.
Oh, God, yes.
Absolutely. I can't stand dubbing. I will actually... In fact, I've been trying to see for a long time a copy of a film called Time Crimes, or Kronos, as it was originally titled.
Lost Kronos,
I think it is. Anyway, it doesn't matter. Time Crimes is what it's known as. And every copy I've managed to get my hands on of this film over the last couple of years has been dubbed. And it's originally Spanish, I believe. Mm-hmm. And I've been trying to, and I finally got hold of a DVD that looks like it's subtitled. It's like, I can finally watch this movie.
Lost Chrono Crimes.
Oh, there you go. Thank you. Anyway, so...
you were saying something before. There was a couple things that bugged you in the movie that you thought we might agree on. One of them was they didn't use the bike enough.
That was one,
I was actually thinking that they probably set that up for a side story where it just shows them chasing down the homeless guy. Even though I don't know why there's homeless guys in the Tron world, but okay.
Yeah.
They're like addicted to glowy water.
No, he's like when you do a defragment on your hard drive and you get those little fragments of data.
Yeah, he's a registry error.
He's the red dot. He's one of the red marks. He's just trying to clean it out.
Like, do you remember in the first one, after Flynn crashed his broken recognizer and he's wandering around and people are wandering around his transistors? I want to know what the hell those things were. I want those things back in the third movie.
Oh, this
is somebody tell me what the hell they are.
According to Steve Lisberger in the documentary, they were kind of like space hookers.
Yep.
Yeah, I was like, that thing is like a prostitute. Why would that? that's internet porn, I guess. I don't know.
There you go.
it's those rogue files that people put on their computers so they can look at it. You know, the ones that would have been like 16-bit color and would have been a picture of a girl that would have taken about 5 minutes to load back then.
Oh, things like on the Apple IIe.
That's like a half-cached file.
Yeah.
What was it on the Apple II, the Fuller Brush Man? Do you
remember? No. Man, too old for my taste.
Those who are in my age bracket, you might remember that one. We'll leave it there.
Sadly, I don't. I'm a late Apple converter.
Killer B in the chat room says, space hookers? I'm back in. All right. We're going to wrap this up, I think, unless you've got something else you want to tell us about Fox?
I was thinking that as much as I give love to this thing, I have to point out a couple things that bugged me about it.
Sure.
The main one, of course, we're going to talk about is just the facial rendering of Clue, which I just kind of accepted as he looks that creepy inside the world. Outside, when they kind of show him at the beginning, it's a little unsettling. That part needed to be more fixed than anything. But you know what? They had the light fighter scene at the end of the movie, and that made up for any issues I had in this movie. Because that was absolutely gorgeous watching them all flying around in the sky with light trails knocking everybody out of the sky.
That was brilliant,
especially in 3D.
Well, we, of course, missed out, and I guess it is obvious for most people, but just in case there aren't, of course, in the new one, Tron will be back as well. But I think that's kind of a given for most of us. But,
well, because they could only facially render one actor at a time now that they've got Flynn out of the way.
Yeah, well, hopefully it'll look better.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking was happening, is they just didn't have the money. So they kind of
I've actually heard them say that. Apparently there was supposed to be a reveal of Tron at the end, but they literally ran out of money.
Oh, okay.
I actually felt so stupid I didn't realize that was him, that Rinsler was actually Tron, and I kept looking at the light pattern on his chest. I'm like, I feel like I ought to know that. Like, what's going on? And then they finally reveal it at the end of the movie. It's like, I am so stupid.
That's it, man. You've lost me now. No, I'm just kidding.
Like, at the beginning of the movie when they're panning through Sam's room, it shows, like, the black hole poster as a teaser for a possible new black hole reboot.
It is,
and then it shows the Tron poster, which would be the poster for the game, because obviously there's no Tron movie in their world. But it shows the three dots on top and the one in the center. And then Rinsler, through the entire movie, is the only one that doesn't have practically the same suit everyone else has. He's got three red dots at the one in the center, and that kept bugging me throughout the movie. But he also has the giant motorcycle helmet on his head, which kind of obliterates it, so you don't think about it until Flynn's like, oh my god, that's Tron. And I thought, well, he didn't know that shit 15,000 years. I haven't figured that out for the past half hour, so.
Oh, God.
But
yes, no, just as a follow-up to
As a film, like, one of the things that bugged me, like, right in the beginning was when Sam was picked up by the recognizer, and he's trying to bother the guy next to him. He's like, dude, do you know my dad? Because my dad is cool. He made this place. And he looks at him and growls at him, and he looks at the camera and is like, oh, my God, he has a stupid expression. He should never have looked at the camera. That's my nitpick for the movie.
That's fair enough. I was about to say, I was about to say, just to follow up on that, yes, the remake of The Black Hole is happening. So, they've been talking about
that. That was the first movie I ever saw as a kid in theaters.
Oh, well, there you go. I saw it at the cinema too. I quite enjoyed Black Hole. It's stupid, but it's quite fun. So, and that actually
it's creepy too.
Yeah. Great soundtrack.
You kill Norman Bates with a robot with blades in his hand, and that's a Disney movie. I was like, holy shit.
All right, we're going to wrap this up because your Skype is starting to break up a little bit as well, and that kind of happens on the one-hour mark, we've always noticed. Yep. So we'll wrap this up before we completely lose you. Can you tell us a little bit, James, Fox4649, where we can find more of you on the internet?
You can find me at Fox4649 on Twitter. You can email me at fox@weekendronin.com. We also have a podcast that we put out once a week called Real Junkies, and you can find that on iTunes. That's R-E-E-L Junkies. You can also email us at realjunkies@weekendronin.com. And Weekend Ronin is two words, weekend and Ronin, R-O-N-I-N, the Japanese for a masterless samurai. And you should be able to Google any and all of that, and there are links all across the board for all of them. And I exist everywhere and nowhere because I'm on the internet.
Well, there you go.
Fantastic. And Josh, where can people find out more about you?
Well, obviously, you have rawdlc.com, which is a gaming website. We record a live show Tuesday nights, which we just had yesterday. That will go up on a live feed and a podcast very soon. Just look for DLC, and you will probably find us. And, of course, we have the Arbiter magazine, which has just dropped. Everyone that can actually do it, if you just head over to the website, it is still on the main page, I believe.
That would be geekactually.com.
Geekactually.com. and yes, just we need subscribers because we're trying to push for as many people as we can. It's free. There's nothing else. We are going to send you just a copy of a magazine once a month. So you guys should totally sign up.
And even
for
if you're worried about download limits, we don't even send you a copy of the magazine. We send you notification and a link to download it.
And
so
it's
if you
only
decide,
4 megs.
That's right. If you decide you don't want to download, well, you still get the notification. Yep. So, and I am Dave McVeigh. You can find me on Twitter, Facebook fan pages, websites, and so forth. If you go to geekactually.com, you will find out all about all of it. I'm also currently working on a blog called My Year with Movies, which is my ongoing mission to watch a movie a day and record it. You can find that also at geekactually.com. There's a link. Just follow the Follow Us link on geekactually.com, and you'll find out everything about it. This episode, the music that you'll probably hear throughout the beginning and ending of this episode is all from the Daft Punk soundtrack, so that's what that is, if you're just wondering, if you haven't seen the movie. And make sure you do check out our other shows, our more regular shows, which are Geek Actually, which is a tech and general geekdom podcast, Film Actually, which is our usual movie podcast. Both can be watched live, recorded every Saturday, 12 p.m. start time. It's Australian Eastern Daylight Savings Times, UTC plus 11, at geekactually.com/live, or just search for the shows individually on iTunes. I think that's it.
Yes, and of course, as Snakes pointed out, the dlccrew.com is the website for all the boys. Snake is in our chat room right now. If you like playing games and you want a group of people to get together and game with, these dudes are really nice and not the scary nerds you find on the websites, and they're also all not 13 years of age.
Definitely not.
Yes.
Definitely.
Do you all have racist homophobes like we do in America?
Racist homophobes? Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, just checking. I want to make sure we're on the same planet.
They're all around the world.
No, they come into our games as well, dude.
Yeah. Ugh. Yeah. I love Gears of War, but I just hate having to deal with that.
Yeah, no, the racist homophobes are everywhere. You just got to ignore them or boot them, one of the two. Anyway, we're going to get out of here. Thank you very much for joining us. Thank you, chat room, for joining us. It's been a very talkative chat room. They've been in there chatting away. We have tried to grab what we can out of it, but it gets very hard to follow three different things
Plus,
at once.
Plus, we're trying to battle with a Skype connection.
And we're battling with a Skype connection
as well. Seconds out, so.
Yeah, you'll notice that Skype is always one awkward thing about Skype is that you can't just kind of talk over each other. You've got to kind of go, oh, wait, stop.
Yep.
Wait. anyway, but thank you very much, Fox, for joining us for this.
Thank you so much. This has been so much fun.
Oh, me too. I can't wait for 3 years when Tron 3 comes out. We'll do this all over again.
Dude, we will get you in here before
We're doing it sooner than that.
Yeah.
Pick another movie I can absolutely geek out on. It'll be easy.
We got to get you in for a regular show as well.
Yep. You got to come on Geek Actually, dude.
Geek or film? Excellent.
Oh, sorry, film.
Geek or film? We're getting geek.
Maybe both.
Fox is a geek, man. We can get him on in Geek Actually.
So, I can't wait till we have a week to just do Star Trek.
Oh, Star Trek show.
Dude, that's epic. Yeah. That would take so long.
We got to do a Star Trek
show. We'd have to take one TV show each day for 3 or 4 hours.
Yeah. Oh, the other thing we've been pondering doing, and we'll just let's just wrap this show up, and then we'll have a chat about things. Yeah. So, guys, thank you very much for joining us. Check us out, our Film Actually and Geek Actually on Saturday. And this is us saying goodbye.
All right.
Bye-bye, all.
End of line.
Hi, everybody. In case you thought we'd forgotten, we did. And it's it's actually attached now to the end of the show. The winner for the Tron situation, do you have the email on you, Dave?
I do. Somewhere here.
Well, while you're doing that, I'll talk it out. For anyone that wasn't aware, if you watch the Geek Actually show, this is going to start happening more and more regularly between the Geek and the Film Actually shows, which are available on iTunes. We actually announce competitions going along. We recently had one for Commando, and then on top of that, we had one for Tron, which was going to be announced on the special, which is that we asked people to write in and tell us why Tron 1 was better than Tron 2. It was more just to see if people could come up with any good reasons, and we have actually had the winning email reply, which is from Matt White.
Or Snake Oz in our chat room, and he writes, the reason Tron is better than Tron Legacy is Tron has a stronger story, and I haven't seen Tron Legacy yet.
So I love he's making that decision already. But yes, no, for that reason alone, because I just thought that was an awesome email. Snake, you are going to win a copy of that, and we will be posting it out in the next few days. And of course, I will get in contact with you to let you know when I've sent that.
And
so
also,
that you know when to expect
Snake,
it.
You need to send us your mail at your postal address. So send that to feedback@geekactually.com. And I completely forgot to mention during the show, because we were so carried away in conversation, that if you have any comments or statements or anything you want to say about Tron or anything about this show, you can send those to feedback@geekactually.com as well. So.
Yep.
Right. I think that's it. Yep. Just as a reminder, we are cheap asses. None of this stuff is new that we're giving away.
Yeah. Well, mine technically is still new. It's only ever
Snake wants to know if he can get it signed.
Yes. Yes, you can. Would you like it signed by both me and Dave? Me, Dave. Do you want me to send it to America and I'll get Fox to sign it for you?
Sure.
Might take a while. Might take a while.
Snail mail. You know, I'll just sign. I'll do a signature and I'll email it to you. That way, you can just use it for whatever you want to.
Dave's.
Oh wait, this is on the internet, right?
No, James.
We're just getting confusing now.
James in our chat room has suggested that I sign Josh's name and Josh signs my name.
No. All right. Well, we will make sure that I will bring it up here today. We will sign it and we will send that out.
We will
to
get
you.
That mailed off to you by the end of the week. Okay.
Cool.
But first, you've got to send us your postal address to feedback@geekactually.com.
Cool.
Okay, guys, that's it then.
All right. So for the second time, we'll see you later.
See you later. Bye now.
End of line.